and welcome to Surroundscapes, where Blue Sound Professional dives into the technologies and trends making headlines in the world of commercial AV installation, including case studies and unusual applications of AV technology, as well as technical reviews and troubleshooting, and emerging technologies like power over Ethernet and decentralized networks. My name's Graham Harrison, and I'm the General Manager of Blue Sound Professional. And in today's episode, I'm going to be focusing on the topic of experiential design. This is an area that, although it creates a lot of the headlines in the industry, is often overlooked by people and is certainly misunderstood. To put this right, I've got one of my good local friends here in Portland, Scott Simpson. Apart from some local projects around town that we've done together, Scott's day job is as an experiential designer for AVISPL, working on some of the coolest projects in the world. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Graham. Thanks for having me.
That's lovely to have you here. Let's start off by talking about your career to date. How did you get where you are now?
Well, I started in audiovisual in the 1990s, early on with residential. So I started off as a technician, making $7 an hour, pulling cable, terminating VGA connections. And after a while, I realized that I wanted a little bit cushier job. So I started looking over the shoulder of the AMX programmers. And so my next step was into control system programming. And that kind of got me into looking at systems integration, looking at different ways that, you know, multiple disciplines can be pulled together and controlled. And that really kind of sparked my interest. And so I did a lot in residential audiovisual for the high-end residential market and large mansions and yachts and large home theaters. And so that got me really into the importance of merging aesthetics and audiovisual design. And so that's kind of where I got my start, and then got into experiential design in 2013 when I moved to Portland to start working with Downstream here. And yeah, since then I've been in this weird little niche and kind of helping to make multi-sensory experiences and, you know, this, what you said was kind of misunderstood, where we kind of merge in multiple disciplines and to bring about a transformative experience.
Yeah, tell us a little more about Downstream.
So yeah, Downstream is actually a partner of ours that we work with quite a bit, but Downstream is an experiential design group of graphic designers, UX designers, architects, and then I was part of their audiovisual team. And we all worked together for mainly on EBCs, executive briefing centers, what are now called customer innovation centers or customer experience centers. And they're essentially museums to their brands for corporations. So essentially, if you look at a brand and they want to bring in their high-end VIP clients and they want to introduce them to their latest technologies, but then also kind of tell their brand story, tell their brand history, but get the client excited about who they're working with and their partnership. And so these EBCs, we started working on those in the early 2000s, at least I did. And that's where a lot of these elevated experiences started developing for next level collaboration, next level. Well, first they would come in and it would be a, you know, say for instance, a welcoming feature to really kind of surprise and delight people when they walk in. But then there would be a deeper brand storytelling, a deeper dive into, you know, who that brand is and what they mean to their customers and community. And then a little bit more about their, you know, why they're there. So a little bit about, you know, collaboration tools to help them chart their, you know, where they are in the next year, where they're going with their relationship. And so we've seen this trend grow quite a bit in the last few years. and beyond just Fortune 500 companies.
So we're downstream providing content as well as technology?
Yes, yes. So downstream, they develop content such as both video but interactives. Back when I was there, we had a this interactive platform where it was tied to a content management system, and where a client can instantly have nonlinear meetings and bring in resources and assets from the, both the web, local assets, video, photos, annotation, and then even share wirelessly from their laptops or mobile devices and be able to just, wherever the meeting takes them, bring in assets for that and topics for discussion. And we're seeing more platforms like that with those were bespoke platforms that were created. Downstream now has sells that platform they're calling Bridge, and there's others like Aleo that are that we're using now. So those what used to be those experiences for the super high-end market are now more accessible and can be utilized for everyday workers.
So tell me about your current gig at AVI SPL XTG.
So the Experience Technology Group, or XTG, is a group within AVI SPL. It's a lot of acronyms, I know. But we are a group that is an overlay for our local offices. And for those of you who don't know, AVI SPL is a large AV integrator, a global AV integrator. And so we have offices all over the world to service a lot of our clients that have an international footprint. So what XTG does is we come in for the projects, the experiential projects that are beyond the normal UC space, the normal conference room space or lecture halls, where you need that multidisciplinary, multisensory experience where similar to what we were talking about. So say, for instance, you have you know, a university that has an alumni center and they want large-scale interactives, or say, for instance, you have a museum that really wants to elevate the experience for visitors. So we're brought in for to help the clients understand the pieces, understand all the players, and we help make those connections. Like I said, we're partners with Downstream or Hyperquake or other experiential design firms, and we help put those pieces together. With fabricators, with and help clients understand what it takes to deliver these experiences. So, so think of us as kind of we come in and a client says, "I want a large video wall." Hold on a second. Why do you want a video wall? What is the messaging? What are you trying to accomplish? Let's get back and peel back the onion a little bit and figure out the why. And so we come in and take those deeper dives with the clients and then connect them with our partner ecosystem and bring in the pieces and help them understand what their vision is, what they need to put together, what the probable costs are, because sometimes they're not aware of all the pieces of, you know, what it will take to put this together. And then we will, you know, kind of flesh out that vision. Put together ROM pricing, put together designs to help them understand. And then we will then also work on the back end to augment our local teams with things like projection mapping or programming show control systems or, you know, those disciplines that are not in the ordinary AV consultant or AV integrators toolbox.
So if I pull back, and I think you've kind of answered this question, but I'm going to pull back anyway. If someone were to say to you, okay, you work in experiences, what are experiences? What would you tell them at a cocktail party or something?
So experiences are where you want to use multi-sensory techniques to transform and elevate the built environment to for a message to create a lasting experience that that a visitor takes away. But a lot of it is making a connection. And so using not just audio visual, but also other technologies, using biophilia, using scent diffusers, using any number of things. Think, for instance, we had a client recently that we did a it was a showroom for soccer, or what your side of the pond would call football. So we wanted to really make a connection. So using scent diffusers, you could smell the pitch of the football pitch and really connect with, really kind of bring back the sensory, connection to being out on the field and getting excited that the game is about to start. Mm-hmm. So it's about putting together, numerous pieces into a cohesive experience that tells us brand story, tells a message, or helps helps make a connection in a way that just a screen and a video would not suffice.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's various things areas that I want to explore from here. One of them is in our industry, in the AV industry, about 25 years ago, we moved from products to solutions. So, mm-hmm. someone like an AVI SPL as an integrator will integrate products together to provide a solution from products made by different manufacturers and kind of glue them all together and maybe control them with a third-party control system. And that was a really big move 20 mm-hmm. to 25 years ago, rather than just selling boxes, kind of selling boxes and expertise in solutions. Our industry is having the hardest time moving from solutions to experiences. And it's interesting, it's fascinating to me because we've been talking about this for at least a decade, because solutions mm-hmm. is a collection of boxes and experiences are what those boxes enable. So they're actually what the customer's interested in. They don't care that they've got a load of boxes in a rack somewhere. They exactly. care about what they can do for them, how they can drive their business, how they can create these occasions that are so memorable that hopefully to me, the North Star is memories. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Using right. those experiences to create those gigs that I'll probably remember on my deathbed. And there's meals I've had with people and there's, I won't remember, I don't know, a particular car or a particular bit of gear that I bought. It's the memories come from those times where there's people involved, there's as many of your senses as possible. And we as an industry are having the hardest time making that transition, which is so ironic to me because we are the audiovisual industry and we work in experiences by definition.
I totally agree. And I think a big part of that is the commercial space. So I think residential audiovisual has a less of a problem with this because they are forced to work with very wealthy people in their own homes and with interior designers, with a very aesthetics being of the utmost importance and living in the space. So I think that there's the high-end residential market has had to adhere to that. Within the commercial space, I've found things much more siloed. And I think those silos are where things fall down. And I think that, and that speaks to not just experiences, but also the importance of the trend of interconnected smart buildings and IoT integration, which companies have been trying to do for 20 years now, having the single pane of glass where they know exactly what's going on in their building. And I think that one of the biggest issues there is that, we look at a Gantt chart and say, I come in here, I leave here, you're over here, and never the two shall meet. And we don't really think of commercial buildings as a multidisciplinary single effort. We think of it as, this is my part, this is your part. Those pieces will come together in some way and we'll be done. But unfortunately, many players in the commercial space do not think of that cohesive entire experience with the, you know, with the owner in mind and the end user, and how people actually use spaces, experience spaces, and understand that they're designing for human beings. And so that human-centric design has been a part of architecture for a long time, but unfortunately that hasn't been the case with other disciplines like audiovisual.
There's another element to our industry that it plays into, which is a lot of our industry at the moment is really hyper-focused on the UCC space and meeting rooms and huddle rooms. And to me, those are becoming more and more commoditized. So, you know, often it's hanging a soundbar and a display and we're done. And we have this issue in our industry. Just there was a report yesterday, there was another one this morning about skill shortages in our industry and being able to recruit talent into our industry. And to me, I'm not going to come into an industry to hang a soundbar or a display. It's not sexy. It's not enticing. I'd rather go to the IT industry and make more money. But the experiences part of the industry is super exciting. You know, you look at something like the Sphere and say, oh, I'd love to be involved in something like that, or a big tour, or some of the immersive work that you do. And I don't really understand why our industry is so single-mindedly focused on this commoditized UCC huddle room space. Sure, there's tons of rooms, but there's not a lot of money to be made in that part.
No, and so, you know, we've been talking for forever about this convergence of IT and AV, and that's a piece of that. That's just a natural progression. You know, UC spaces are spaces that the IT department can support. It's with platforms, Microsoft Zoom, that they are now comfortable with. And so, yeah, those spaces are important for AV sales. And they're, but as far as pushing, as far as exciting the next generation, pushing the envelope on what's possible, and then also what to do with some of the extra real estate that we have in now that you have a hybrid situation. So so these UC spaces, while they are very pervasive, we're also finding that a lot of clients are coming to us to rethink those spaces and come up with more purposeful rooms for their workers. So one thing we're finding is that with this cookie cutter commoditized UC space, that it really starts to fatigue people to be in rooms that look the same, where every meeting is in another room that looks just like the last room. And so one of the things I've looked at a lot as we're discussing this with clients is looking at what's happening in universities and trends in lecture halls. One of my favorite places that I visited is at University of Oregon, USO, Oregon State University, Oregon State University here, just south of here. It's called The Link. And The Link is this building where they looked at the lecture halls and said, how can we design the ultimate learning space for our students? So they looked at some old designs that Harvard did in the 1800s, where their research showed that the best learning space is in the round. So rather than having the shotgun where the people in the back of the room get the worst experience, you bring everybody in close together. So better use of space. The professor, they found, will actually conform and get used to working with people behind them. But they found that students, when they're across from each other, are less likely to nod off, look at their phone, they're more engaged, and they found that, you know, their learning scores went up. And so we're starting to see that those purposeful spaces that kind of rethink how the space is used for that purpose is important. The other thing that they did at the link is if you go from classroom to classroom, you'll see that they're all completely different aesthetically. They all have different colors, different feels, different fabrics. And it's because they found that people associate what they learn with the space where they learn it. And if you make that a distinctive space, one, you break up the monotony there, and you don't get that fatigue at the end of the day where you've been in the same space forever. But then they also found that people retained the information better as they attributed it to that distinct space they were in. So we're actually looking at corporations, talking to corporations about, hey, the space for that your finance department uses might need to be a more purposeful space than the space that your design group needs. And your design group needs their own distinct space. So start to look at, okay, maybe I'll book this room because we're going to have a huddle session on what the marketing campaign is going to look like. Or we'll have this one to look at Excel spreadsheets. And those are totally different. Those are totally different workspaces that are needed for those. So we're looking at ways that as corporations are trying to bring people back into the office, we're looking at ways to improve that experience where it doesn't feel so cookie cutter, monotony. And also biophilia is a big part of that too. Mm-hmm. And you and I have had great discussions on the importance of biophilia in workplace and everywhere.
Yeah, couple of things that come to mind as you were talking there. One's Airbnb, where their meeting rooms are all basically based on living spaces that the people that have Airbnbs have. So basically, they base their meeting rooms on a particular, say, living room in a particular Airbnb, and it's very much like that. It's breaking up monotony. It's making meetings more memorable. But the other part is around activity-based work. So the other thing I think you were edging on to is this idea that back in the day, we'd go into our office and we'd sit at our desk and it'd be the same desk all day, all week, all year. And then at the end of the day, we'd leave and get in our car and go home. And now, biophilia being one of the influencing factors, people are talking much more about activity-based work and about, Steelcase talking about neighborhoods and the idea that you might migrate through a space depending on what you want to do at that time. Do I need to focus? Do I need to relax? Do I need energy? Do I need a war room type space where I can set up in there for a few days and just kind of hash things out. How did your group get involved in that side?
In the workplace experiences? So we pretty much do everything outside of the normal space, the normal UC space. So we're brought in for not just doing, museums and large, large immersive environments. We're also brought in to kind of think through the art of the possible. Mm-hmm. Think of what could be. And so we do a lot of boardrooms of the future where you probably heard the term meeting equity, where you want everyone to have the same experience and even the far end, where they don't want to see the person's just a little dot and they're not able to recognize who that dot is. Mm-hmm. But so the far end participants get the same experience as the near end. And so we actually have done a number of boardrooms with a lot of screen real estate using window processing and cameras at each place, at each place setting so that everybody, including have their name there, they'll have their same, the same screen real estate and able to really elevate that meeting experience. We're brought in for those workplace of the future. One of the examples that I recently that we've done for a clothing company is that the clothing company, we found out that their designers will work in a Unity-based application called Close 3D, where they design in this Unity environment, they'll actually make the patterns, put them on these virtual models and see how the fit looks and kind of tuck in here or extend here. But they're doing all this work on a 27-inch monitor. And so, you know, one of the things that we discussed was giving them tools that they don't have at home to bring them back to the office. So we took them to our partner Planar and set up a large direct view LED wall where they could actually play with these models in life-size form, where the model is 6 feet tall. They have multi-touch, they can move and turn the model and actually resize using multi-touch and or actually do a virtual runway show life-size. And so now those spaces where there used to be cubicles can now be a large immersive environment where people can come in or workers can come in and visualize their work. And so we're seeing a lot more large immersive visualization spaces in a number of different verticals. Definitely AEC is a big one.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take a little kind of cul-de-sac, tech geek cul-de-sac here. Okay. You mentioned Unity, and there's Unity, there's Unreal Engine. I'm interested, some of the people that will be listening will have no idea what those are.
Okay, yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about what they are and where you might use Unity and where you might use Unreal?
Absolutely. So those are both gaming engines that were developed mm-hmm. to create very realistic video games. And but they've started to develop into tools for architectural and building the AEC world, who design buildings, have started to utilize those for visualizations, for walkthrough spaces, so you can, with a high degree of reality, see what the finished product's going to look like. So, so architects these days will work in Revit mostly, mm-hmm. and you can take that BIM model in Revit and export it into one of these gaming engines. And then you have a real life visualization of what that space is going to look like or that building. And so we utilize that, utilize that platform for these visualizations and some interactives where you can actually, you know, resize things, change things around. Or do charrettes where you do brainstorming on how you want to lay out the space. And so we're using those in a number of different ways. One of them are XR stages, and which are, if you think of The Mandalorian, where, you know, they filmed it using DirectView LED rather than having to create a sound stage. Mm-hmm. And so you're starting to see that a lot. Well, nowadays, you're starting to see a lot of CEOs wanting to elevate their all-hands experiences and their communications to the entire company. And so, say, for instance, the CEO wants to show a walkthrough of the lobby of the new headquarters. They can actually then appear in that space using an XR, within an XR stage. And that can be an experience that is also hybrid, where you can have an audience in front of them, but then the remote participants see the executive in the actual space. So we're starting to see a lot of demand for what's called XR, so previously VR and AR, so augmented reality or virtual reality. So now with extended reality, XR, you're starting to see a merging of those two worlds. And so within virtual reality, those are the platforms that are most widely used, Unreal Engine and Unity.
And I'm going to talk more about XR in a minute, but where might you use Unity and where might you use Unreal? What are the differences, and where might you use one or the other?
Well, so I found that Unreal is very great for photorealistic visualizations, whereas if you're wanting to do something that's more agile and interactive, Unity has been a better platform for that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to look like it, this is actually, you're actually in the space, it does, it looks like a photograph. Unreal Engine is wonderful for that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you want something like to be more of a gaming engine type of interactive, I find that Unity is a better, mm-hmm. a better platform for that.
Okay. I want to just clarify a couple of things that you said earlier. So for those of you that don't know, Revit is a 3D modeling program by Autodesk. So the 2D one that's probably better known is called AutoCAD. Revit's the 3D version of that. And BIM is building information management that these platforms feed into. So let's get back to talking about AR, VR, morphing into XR. And you and I talk a lot about this when we meet, and it always seems like augmented reality, virtual reality are always like 2 years into the future or 3 years into the future. And that future never really seems to come in the main, in, you know, the mass market. What are your views on, you know, how XR is developing, how it influences what you do, and what you think the future is going to look like for it?
So I think that where the industry got things wrong in the hype cycle for mm-hmm. VR and AR was the idea that adults will spend hours and hours with something on their face and completely cut off from the real world. And that this would be a universally adopted experience that people will want to take part in quite often. And that's just not the case. There's anytime you have something large on your face, it's something that, you know, people are very conscious of their outward appearance. They're very conscious about, also they're very conscious about not being cut off from what's going on around them in the real world. So to transform people in that, I think you need a space made for that, where one, multiple people together can experience it together without being, you know, with huge devices on their face. And so I think that until they work out the ergonomics of having something that is, one, you know, not so cumbersome on your face, but two, where it feels more communal and feels more less detached, mm-hmm. then I think that's the big problem. Now in the AEC world, this has been huge because, you know, you'll have a meeting in the space and then you're done. But I think where everyone thought the future was actually going to be people playing in the virtual world, mm-hmm. people spending hours and hours playing, and beyond, you know, children, I don't see that becoming widely adopted anytime soon until the you know, you can work out on how to not have something so large on your face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Changing direction kind of totally. Mm-hmm. XDG is a separate group within AVI SPL, whereas with mm-hmm. other integrators, often experience is just part of what they do on a more geographical location basis. How do you feel, you know, what's the strengths and weaknesses of both of those two different approaches?
Well, the strengths of XTG is that a lot of our clients come to us because we have that global scale. And then we have teams that understand what it's like to work in those in India, or understand what it's like to, you know, get a project done in the UK, which are much different. So or South America, say for instance, you know, we have a project in Colombia, We need teams on the ground that know how to get work done in those spaces. And we augment those teams with helping them with those commissioning and installations where, it's outside of their comfort zone, but we can augment them and then also help them learn how to deliver these next level experiences and how to deliver these installations that are, that are unique and unlike anything they've done before. So it's both educational for the local teams, but it's also, also we need those local teams. One, they're phenomenal AV installers and engineers, and they know that local market as well, and they know how to get things done in that local market. So we're just a tool in their toolbox to deliver these special spaces that are outside their normal purview.
You mentioned education there. Do you find that you come in, you get a local team involved with doing a cool project, say in Colombia, and they get more excited about it and they kind of start targeting those projects locally and bring you back in to do more of those?
Oh, absolutely. In particular, there are a lot of markets that where they automatically think, okay, these projects only exist in New York or LA or London. Mm-hmm. And so when we get with those local teams and show them, hey, look, we did an experience center for a bottling plant. We just did a project in South Carolina for a automation company for a next level experience center with showing how power flows and data flows utilizing the MX lighting and interactives. So we're starting to see these experiential projects pop up all over the place. So, mm-hmm. I've got a call after this in Arizona for a project there. We just closed a large project in Minnesota. Like I said, we have a new opportunity in Colombia, mm-hmm. Mexico City. We're doing a large project there. So a lot of times there's a perception that only large, very wealthy international cities are where these experiential projects happen. And that's just not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm. So, as a Brit, I feel very proud that London is something of a center for experience design, and there's a ton of really cool stuff there. But
it's probably one of the big epicenters now. I mean,
yeah, there's some really cool stuff going on there at the minute. But you and I are very focused on our own city, Portland, and mm-hmm. we've done a few projects together. We have a few ideas for future projects together. But one of the things that I'm very proud of, and I think everyone in our city is very proud of, is the redevelopment of our airport. And when you come, you go fly out of Portland, come into Portland now, you've got this amazing world-class airport, including a couple of really large-scale generative video monitors that I know you were involved in. So talk us through a little bit that project, because that's a super cool project.
Yeah, that was probably one of the projects I'm most proud of, I think, in my entire career. One, because it's our city, but also because the Port of Portland is very conscious about being different than other airports. They want a great experience for their visitors. They want to really be proud of their sense of space. So they want to really show off Oregon and show off the place where they live. And then they're very big into sustainability. And so that was another big piece of it. So I worked previously with PAE Engineers their claim to fame is actually, they're an MEP firm, an engineering firm that focuses on sustainability. And I gave you a tour of the living building they did here in Portland. And that's the world's largest certified living building, which is the most stringent certification for sustainability. So they were they were integrally involved in the project for 10 years. This has been a decades long project. I worked with the technology team there, and so the idea was to use technology to improve the experience for visitors in some of the most, you know, stressful areas of the airport, the TSA queue. So ZGF Architects came up with the idea to have an integrated, large direct view LED screen that's architecturally integrated in, that looks like it's part of the architecture. So, mm-hmm. You know, the same slatting that you have with the wooden slats throughout the space. But they wanted it to be calming, whereas most screen real estate you see in airports is adverts and digital signage. They wanted this to be a calming experience for people who are about to go through the security queue. So in working with them in this design, we decided to engage with Planar Systems here in Portland, and we designed a large DirectView LED system with Pixera video servers that integrates with data as well to change the with how quickly people are moving through the space, time of day, and so then I wrote the RFP for that project, which was awarded to .dot.dash, who took that concept and then delivered that next level experience through half sister Martha Almy, who you've met, and Laura Frank, mm-hmm. who you've met as well, and they actually took it to the next level with generative content, with video of, throughout Oregon, but also digital art that's very unique and but has that same sense of space. And so they took different data points in utilizing a system we work with quite a bit these days, Smart Monkeys Isaac system, to each day set up a new queue based upon a number of different data points. And so each time you go through, it's a unique experience. It's slightly different. There's something new here. So for the everyday flyer, there's some people that fly out of the airport 3-4 times a week. So each time they can come in and see something new. Mm-hmm. And so that's really exciting that it's a calming, and you've sensed it. We've talked about this. You go in and both the architecture is warm. There are trees everywhere. It's very biophilic, and it's a calming sense of that space. And then you're delighted when you see, and when was the last time you say you were delighted when you're about to go through TSA security? But you're always delighted when you see around the corner that huge immersive screen presenting something unique and something you haven't seen before.
Yeah, you kind of look forward to it. It's the airport's great. It's got stuff like bleachers for when people come out of arrivals, so people can wait for their people that are coming in. It's got, as you say, over 70 trees and 5,000 shrubs native to the area. It's got petting llamas. It's got all sorts of stuff. It's amazing, the airport. And working with Laura and Martha must have been a joy. They're both wonderful people. What are some of your other favorite projects?
So next month I'm going to be in Las Vegas to give a tour of the Arte Museum. And that's another transformative space that's very calming. That project is through an art collective from South Korea called District. Mm-hmm. The first Arte Museum was in Seoul. And this is their first stateside museum. And so we worked with them to create them fulfill their vision of having a space that's on the Las Vegas Strip and completely takes you out of the Strip into a calming, immersive space where you have waves that look like they're about to crash on you. You can smell the salt water from the scent diffusion. There's even an amazing interactive where you can draw your own animal, and then that animal that you just drew appears on screen in front of you, dancing in the landscape, in nature. There's just and there's the space is really one of the most transformative spaces I've been in, because you know it's such a stark contrast to the rest of Vegas. And so you Vegas is sensory overload, and then you then come into a space where you're instantly transformed, you know. And so that I really love Arte Museum because it uses all of your senses. And then there's also the AI element with some of the interactives. So that's really one of the coolest things is being able to utilize some of that, some newer technology to where you become a part of the program, a part of the interactive, and a part of the experience.
Excellent. Yeah, Korea also sounds like it's becoming quite a center for this. The guys in London that do Lightrooms, a really cool initiative there, have got, I think, two installations now in Korea. As we get towards the end of this, and we could talk all day, like we often do, all night, certainly, when we get together, what do you think is the future of experiential design, and how are you looking forward to being a part of it? What do you think we can expect to see?
So some of the trends we have to prepare for are with the price of chip on board LED coming down, and the pervasiveness of these displays. I've talked with a lot of industry insiders about, you know, how much easier and how much more commoditized it's going to become to have these large scale video walls everywhere. So we're going to have almost like Blade Runner. You're going to be able to see video on any wall. Mm-hmm. So that comes with a responsibility. How do we make that where it doesn't feel like Times Square everywhere? Mm-hmm. How do we make that to where it is something that is artful, something that is aesthetically pleasing, something that we want to live in. So that's going to be one of the biggest challenges, but that is going to be the future. Mm-hmm. Also, audio, one of the things you and I have talked about for years, and I think is sorely missed in most experiences out there still in experiential design, is audio. Mm-hmm. So audio, because it doesn't, you don't see audio on a pitch deck, you don't see audio on a visualization. So because of that, it's often not considered until last minute. Mm-hmm. And as you have discussed numerous times over the years, the audio plays a huge part of how impactful an experience can be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you told me about some tests you ran in the past where you showed an image with and without the audio, and how people perceived a better picture. Mm-hmm. When there was audio that reinforced it. So mm-hmm. So it really impacts you come away with a much more memorable experience. And also what you were talking about, tapping into memory, and how important it is to hit on those cues. Audio is a great piece of that. And then I also said we're using scent more as well. Mm-hmm. But having touched on those cues, but then one of the great trends I love now is where we can actually have very directional audio and be able to have an audio experience that's confined to this space and then not interfering with the audio experience over here. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a great trend that I see continuing, where we have much more directional audio that doesn't, that for one, is not interacting with the, with the space as much acoustically. And then also we can steer to exactly where we want the participants to hear what they need to hear. Mm-hmm. So I think the future, you're gonna see, those two trends definitely. And then of course, the the hype word of the day, AI, we're going to find more personalized experiences utilizing machine learning. And so already we have a number of partners that are playing around with that, with taking personalized cues, utilizing AI and cultivating a more bespoke experience for that particular person.
Yeah, that individualization is I think going to be important. Obviously, in the sphere, in the audio domain with the Holoplot system there, they're able to create individual audio experiences for almost everyone in the audience. So that kind of personalization, I think, is going to be important. It's interesting hearing you talk about, you know, bringing audio more in. And I worked in the past with both Janet Eckelman and Neri Oxman in kind of bringing audio into what they do. You know, Janet does large scale visual sculptures, outdoor sculptures, and Neri kind of works at the intersection of computation analysis, nanotechnology, 3D printing, and what's the other one that she, natural design, by Ophelia, and does amazing stuff. As we wrap up, and I'm actually going to have you on our next series as well to talk about another area that you're deeply interested in terms of sustainability. But is there anything else you'd like to add to this episode?
Well, I think they go hand in hand. I think sustainability has become a big part of how we design systems. And so that's another trend, I think, that you're going to start seeing at ISC this year. We saw a number of great, great new technologies that are also very sustainable, like e-paper.
Yeah.
You're a big fan of e-paper. I see you all the time with your remarkable tablet. Mm-hmm. But e-paper is starting to really have a moment, because if you think about in digital signage, how often we see displays that are just plain static images.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see video displays using a ton of energy just to display a menu, mm-hmm. or just to display photos.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think all of those could be replaced with e-paper displays that use no electricity if they're presenting static images, that's huge. So we're going to start seeing a lot more experiences with where the static images can be that, or do a mosaic with a number of changing images, but still utilizing a minute amount of power. So we're starting. I'm really excited about that trend. And then also one of my favorite things I saw this year at ISC was Hive has a new, and Hive is a company that makes video servers, and they actually have these card-based video servers that can go into card slots and displays and projectors, where you'll have actual 8K 444 playback of video that's localized to that display. So think about how much power, how much infrastructure, cabling we're going to not need to utilize. So it's going to be a much more sustainable if we have all that video serving power on the device itself. And these are gen-locked, which means we can put them together and in the same way that you would have in the past, where we'd have a large PC with 8-10 outputs to output to these projectors. We now can then distribute mm-hmm. that among the actual projectors or displays themselves. And that starts to really break down the costs of, you know, the amount of carbon that's innate within the manufacturing of all these products that we need in there, but then also the cabling and then the power consumption as well. So these are all trends that within experience design that I think, are also a huge, huge sustainable trend that I think is going to start to continue, where we're going to start seeing, we're going to have less boxes. We're going to have less, embedded carbon. within all of these installations. And we're going to start seeing, you know, just we're going to be focusing more on the experience itself and less on individual boxes. And you and I have talked about this forever.
Yeah.
The infatuation we have with boxes in this industry and why that needs to go away, because the trend is away from that and more into cloud, more into software level integrations, API integrations. And so our infatuation in the AV industry with shiny boxes is going to go away. We just need to.
I hope so. I really hope so. Yeah, those trends in the very first episode in this this particular series of Surroundscapes, we covered that e-ink trend at ISC, and I was particularly interested in the Agile Display Solution solar powered e-ink displays, where they literally have no cables. There's no power. There's no data. It communicates with the cloud once or twice a day to update content. And that also, and the decentralization thread that you put in there, and the two of those also go together to another trend, which is the speed of deployment, very large scale deployment, where you're able to harness some of these new technologies to really leverage scale in a way that it has been very difficult before. Anyway, we could chat forever, but I have to wrap things up today. So thanks so much, Scott, for being here and for your insights. I'm looking forward to our next cocktail evening together, and also to having you back later. We hope you like this episode and want to listen to more. We have new episodes released every Tuesday. They're available at your favorite podcast apps. Although the easiest place to find everything related to Surroundscapes is at surroundscapes.bluesoundprofessional.com. So Scott, if people want to find out more about you, where's the best place to find out what you're doing?
So you can go to our AVISPL website. We just updated our website with our new identity, brand identity. But if you want to see more of our projects, go to avispl.com/XTG, and you'll see all of the projects we've worked on, a little bit about our philosophy, a little bit about who we are, and about how we can elevate experiences for you.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Graham.